Greetings. Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do some other things. And so we'll start to do those post-haste. Here we are on the 21st anniversary of the monumental event, the 21st anniversary of the birth of our first child, he said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. That's right, 21 years ago, well, not this month, it was last month, technically. But, of course, today is the big anniversary, I shouldn't say it that way. The anniversary of the 9/11 event, the incident. And I just want to, so this is the 21st anniversary of what some people I dearly love, now call the mother of all conspiracies, 9/11, the inside job that started it all and led to COVID and it's the end of the world. It's all based, anyway, the mother of all conspiracies, the inside job, the controlled demolition of the towers, all of it. And now COVID has revealed to all of us that we should have believed Alex Jones all along. All of that. So, you know, Bush, Cheney, the military-industrial complex, it's all been planned. We never had a chance. There was nothing any of us could have done. So I just want to speak to that for a moment, just to get it off my chest. I don't believe 9/11 was an inside job. Do I believe there's been a communist conspiracy to take down America for my entire lifetime? Yes, I do. Do I believe that incidents and coincidences and realities and events have been taken advantage of by wicked people for their own ends, primarily communists? Yes, I do. But as far as 9/11 goes, I am convinced that America, the American government, the CIA, whoever, all the conspirators, anyway, I think they stumbled rather arrogantly into Osama bin Laden and his Al-Qaeda, and they thought they could use them in Afghanistan against the previous grist for the military-industrial complex mill. Do I believe in the military-industrial complex? Yes, I do. Do I believe there are people who would instigate wars to build weapons to sell to the government to make lots of money? Yes, I do. From Reagan forward through Bush and Clinton and Bush, all of them stumbling ignorantly through history with their machinations and their allegiances and their greed and their godlessness and all of that. They stumble ignorantly into Osama bin Laden. They think they can use him against the Russians, and they do, and the Russians eventually vacate Afghanistan, and America declares victory, not realizing that they had offended some people who weren't necessarily money. And sex were not the primary motivators for some of the barefooted throwbacks that Osama bin Laden had recruited around the world. Although that was top three. But anyway. So Osama bin Laden struck America, not because he was a CIA plant, but because he had big dreams of his own glorification. And his own global caliphate and his own godless appetites and pride. That's why. And then it all led to wherever it's led. Anyway, I just want to I just want to remind everyone, I don't know where you were on the morning of September 11th, 2001. I was watching television. I watched the towers burn and sag for hours. For hours. I watched it in real time. Not knowing for certain what had happened, but knowing for certain that airplanes had hit the buildings because I watched. Anyway, and then I watched the towers fall after burning and sagging for hours in real time, and intuitively, the moment they began to collapse, I knew why. It was because the airplanes hit them, and they'd been on fire for hours, and they were sagging and heaving, and they were sagging to one side. I remember I watched it, so get out of here with your conspiracy theories. Anyway, the crazy ones anyway. Well, we don't need conspiracy theories. We've got people hell-bent on the destruction of Western civilization and we don't need conspiracy theories. We have actual conspiracies of communists and godless heathens who want to destroy everything that's right and good. And we can do something about it. We do have a chance. We're not all helpless against the conspiracy. None of us are, at least not in our own circle and in our own lives. And so don't give in to the idea that there's it's a hopeless fight against the conspiracy. It's not. In fact, we win against the conspiracy, and you can win personally. Your family can win personally, eternally, spiritually. And the rest of the heathens can go straight to hell. How about that? In fact, speaking of them and the conspiracy, we go to a headline from the End of Days file. People ask me often, do you think it's the end times? And I say, uh-huh, yeah. Yeah, it's the end times. It's always the end times. I mean, for me, I might, if I'm really lucky and I take care of myself, I might have another 30 years. So it's getting close to the end, closer than to the beginning, so it's all a matter of what you mean by the end times. From the headline here, from the End of Days file, get this if you need a conspiracy. You want to worry about conspiracies? Get this. Bisexual cannibal film gets 8.5 minutes standing ovation at Venice Film Festival. So who needs a conspiracy of the CIA? You've got a film that I'm not going to name, starring an actor who I won't name, who I never heard of, which is a blessing to me that I'd never heard of this actor. This new movie, the actor portrays a bisexual cannibal romping through 1980s rural America. It's a coming-of-age film where the character's coming-of-age have an uncontrollable need to eat human flesh and blood. And he's a homosexual or a bisexual or whatever, some sexual deviant. The report here from Breitbart says that the movie is as gruesome and gory as the name suggests. Maybe they reviewed it over there at Breitbart. We won't be reviewing the film that received an 8.5 minute standing ovation at the Venice Film Festival, a film about bisexual cannibals, because, well, we don't want to watch the end of the world. We'd rather read about it. So there you have it. That's actually happening. There's been a movie actually released about a homosexual cannibal pervert in the 1980s. And the people associated with it, not only were they not arrested, they're giving each other awards at a public festival. And so people ask, is it the end of days? Well, I don't know how it gets any worse. This reminds me of 1974. 1974, or thereabouts, when I was at church with my family. And in those days, we held church in a house. It was in a house. It was a house church. And the pastor, I remember distinctly, the pastor saying, if it gets much worse than this, and they were talking about the hippies and all of that. If it gets much worse than this, he said, the Lord will have to raise up Sodom and Gomorrah and apologize. That was 1974. Okay. And now you've got homosexual cannibals giving each other awards at a... okay. So, from there, that's the end of Day's file. From there, we go to... I don't even want to bring this up because my extremely attractive audio engineer could be offended because of some of the people involved. But I want to address the latest rantings of Kanye West. Because I must. So this article opens up. Grammy-winning recording artist and billionaire fashion mogul Kanye West... dot, dot, dot. Because I'm supposed to be impressed. Ooh, he's won a Grammy. Ooh. He's got $1 billion and he's in fashion. Wow, I'm very impressed. I'd like to know what he has to say about life. Anyway, what he has to say about life actually turns out to be more impressive than the fact that he won a Grammy or that he has $1 billion designing fashion for drug-addled morons with more disposable income than any generation in history. Oh, I'm so impressed. But what he says is, quote, Hollywood is a giant brothel and pornography destroyed my family, unquote. So that's far more impressive than the billion, far more impressive than the Grammy, is that Kanye West said that. Hollywood is a giant brothel. Pornography destroyed my family. He's in the midst of a divorce, or he's already divorced, I forget. He's divorcing some prostitute that he married, and he dressed her up. No, she was already dressed up like a prostitute. But he exploited her for a number of years before having something of an epiphany and possibly even a conversion event. We hope so. And now him and her, they don't get along. I'm not going to mention her name. He goes on I'll post a link to the article. He goes on a relatively vulgar, if not at times cogent and at times relevant rant, and at sometimes just vulgar and obviously confused. Anyway, I'll post to it. You can sort it out for yourselves. He says, I'll try to read one of the less vulgar, more coherent statements. Come and get me, says Kanye West. This is on Twitter, I believe. He's tweeting. Mm-hmm. He says, come and get me. I'm a man of God. The father's job is to be the bad guy sometimes. Now, what? Okay. To be the bad guy. Now, what he did in the Twitter rants, or whatever you call it, is he admonished his daughters. He said, don't let Chris make you do Playboy like she made her daughters. So Kanye's saying to his granddaughters, don't let your grandmother force you into Playboy like she did her kids. Because Kanye's mother's mother, supplied her daughters to Playboy magazine and then built what they are, which is a couple of hideous Jezebels. And Kanye's saying to his granddaughters, don't do that. Kanye's saying to her granddaughters, his daughters, don't do that. Don't go on Playboy like Chris did to your mom, basically. And so for some reason, he thinks that makes him the bad guy. I got to be the bad guy sometimes. Don't go do Playboy. Okay. That's not bad. I know. That Kanye West is proof that recovering from a long-term habit of sinfulness is difficult. No doubt, rampant sexual immorality, drug and alcohol abuse, and all of that, I'm sure that's what Kanye's life was up until. And so he should serve as a warning sign to the young people to avoid that type of habitual sinful lifestyle, because then even when you come to the knowledge of the true and living God, and even a knowledge that can save your soul from the hellfire and damnation to come, you still may not be able to fully comprehend or express what's actually going on. note to Kanye. You're the good guy, Kanye, when you tell your daughters not to follow in the footsteps of their Jezebel grandmother and their prostitute mother and prostitute themselves for Playboy magazine. That makes you the good guy. So hopefully, I mean, all I can say is pray for Kanye. Pray for Kanye. I mean, he needs help. Just like all of us. Just like all of us. So we go from the end of days, or for Kanye, the end of days, D-A-Z-E, to reason number 1,992. Is that right? It seems like we should be further along. I'm going to go with reason number 1,992 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. And for that, we go to an article from WorldNet Daily about parents who are suing the school district because the school district is secretly transitioning kids. And that doesn't mean transitioning them from preteens to adolescents to young adults into worthwhile careers, or transitioning little girls into homemakers. No, they're not doing any of that. You know what they're doing. Parents are alleging in a lawsuit out in Wisconsin that the school district out there is training teachers to affirm, quote, gender transitioning, unquote, without parental consent. That's what they're suing over. And this is in the Eau Claire, Wisconsin school district. Eau Claire and Wisconsin in general being a hotbed of communism since the early 20th century. I don't know what happened up there in Wisconsin with how the communists got a hold of the long winters or something, gave them a lot of time to sit and listen and read the People's Worker magazine or listen to rantings by communist lecturers. I don't know, but the communists have now gotten to the point where they've combined basically two or three fronts. You've got the cultural degradation, just the general sexual immorality that you can trace back to the abandonment of traditional marriage by traditional people, which we used to just call marriage by men and women. So that started it all. It didn't start with the homosexuals and the perverts and the trannies. It started with the normal men and women who couldn't keep their marriages together, what for all the adultery. That's where it... So the communists have taken advantage of that. They've combined it now with the green religion, right? And then brought that in with the educational institution and the pop culture. That's four fronts. When four fronts all come together from four different directions, everything gets compressed and squeezed down until it explodes. And that's kind of where we are right now. And to the point where we have people sending their kids into an institution, then filing a lawsuit against the institution for basically trying to rape and molest their children, and then they still send their children to that institution as the lawsuit continues. I'd be interested to find out the actual parents here. Are they still sending their kids to that school? My guess is yes. At least some of them, if not most of them, if not all of them, are. They're like so many parents that we experience in our daily lives, where they lament the tragic and astonishing and terrifying state of the government schools while they drive their kid to the school. Okay, so we go back to Eau Claire. The district there has formed a gender identity policy that includes teachers calling children by different names and allowing children to use their preferred pronouns. Let's see here. They calling children by a different name and allowing them to use facilities designated for the opposite sex, whatever that means, if there is an opposite sex. So I'll bet you that the school district doesn't assert that there even is an opposite sex. We're not letting kids use the opposite sex bathroom. That's ridiculous. There's no such thing as opposite sexes. Okay. Let's see. Introduced or named in the court filings is a document called a facilitator's guide. A facilitator's guide, I said. That it's for trainers of teachers. It states that some parents weaponize religion against queer people. And that oppression is coming from parents. This is a document circulated amongst the child molesting perverts in the government schools against parents. Oh, Doug, you shouldn't say that. There's a lot of good teachers, good, strong Christian teachers in there. If you're allowed to point out that there are good, strong Christian teachers in the government schools, I should be allowed to point out that there are piles of child molesting perverts. So I'll let you mention your Christian, strong Christian, to strong, powerful Christian teachers, as long as you'll let me remind people that there are piles of homosexual, deviant, perverted, child molesting scum. That's in the government schools. How do we know they wrote the facilitator's guide that's been introduced into court? I don't want to get upset about this. The lawsuit contends that the Eau Claire School District's program and actions violate the state and constitutional rights of parents. That's the lawsuit. So, folks, the people on our side who want to take this to court are forced into civil court. Can you believe this? Someone writes a guide that talks about parents weaponizing religion against queers, that oppression is coming from parents, and these parents are forced to go to civil court right there. I have to ask myself, what is it going to take for you people to wake up? What is it going to take? Are they going to have to rape your child in the front of the school, in front of your face? Is that what it will take? If that happened, would you consider taking her out of the school? What's it going to take? Anyway, so it violates federal and state constitutional rights. What about criminal law? What about criminal law? No? This doesn't violate criminal law? If not, how is that? What exactly happened to the law that teachers preaching sexual anything to anyone isn't a violation of the law? What happened to the law? And let's figure that out and get that fixed. Lawyers for the plaintiffs, which are the parents, say that parents with kids in the government schools retain the fundamental right to care for their children and raise them according to their family, faith, and values. Unquote. That's what the lawyers say. To which anyone observing the situation would have to ask, really? How's that? How's that that the parent assumes they retain the fundamental right to care for their children when they turn them over to an institution for 8+ hours a day? So that's naive at best to assume that you reserve any authority over your children. And it's negligent at worst to assume that you can drop your kids off with people who now for, well, let's just say at least the last 5 years. In fact, let's just say at least the last 3 years. You can't deny what they are. It's been put right in your face. So I would say it's negligent at this point to assume that you retain the right to raise your children according to family, faith, and values. So anyway, let's go now to the lawyer in chief here, America First Legal President Stephen Miller. I believe this is the same Stephen Miller who used to work for Donald Trump, the very deadpan. That guy, right? I think this is him who's leading a crusade. He says public schools are engaged in, quote, the malicious sexual exploitation of children. And this exploitation must be extricated root and branch from our schools, says Stephen Miller. He does not call for parents to extricate their children from a situation where he himself says there is the malicious sexual exploitation of children going on. You see, when I see malicious sexual exploitation of children, my instinct is to tell the parents to extricate your children from that. Stephen Miller's instinctual response is fund my lawsuit. Fund my lawsuit, and over the next 10 to 12, how many years do I have till retirement? For the next 10 to 12 years, we'll root and extract, we'll extract it root and branch, me and my team of lawyers. Send out some fundraising letters, we'll raise some money. Anyway, Stephen Miller, I like some of the things he says. I think he's generally confused. And this is the reason America's going to hell in a handbasket. He's one of the adults in charge, is Stephen Miller. He's one of the adults who comes off to most people as actually knowing what's happening, and he doesn't know what to do. You see, ladies and gentlemen, we are beyond the adversary being the primary problem. It's just not the case anymore. We are the problem. It's like the moronic, imbecilic Republicans and military-industrial complex apparatchiks who stumbled into Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda to back in the late 1980s. They became the problem. They became the problem because of their ignorance and stupidity and their naivete. And a similar thing has happened to conservatives, to Christians who stumbled across the progressives in the early 20th century and thought that we could use them to facilitate, to some degree, the satisfaction of some of our lusts. That's what we Christians did. We thought, well, you know what? I'd love to drop the kids off at school every day and then get a second car, and then we could have more money and we could go out more. And I'm against the whole free love thing, but so many conservatives and Christians wanted to just have the option open for... And so... You stumble across something you think you can use for your own ends, and you find out that it becomes your end. And so that's where, and it didn't take a conspiracy of the CIA and to make us all helpless against the power of the conspiracy. It was just us and the church leadership in general over the past 100 years. Abdicating our responsibility to do what was right, even in the face of it being difficult and uncomfortable and causing some people to suffer. There is an almost religious aversion to suffering that has become an almost religious aversion to discomfort. So nobody's allowed to suffer, ever. In fact, that's what must be avoided above all, is any suffering. And so once you fall for that lie that nobody should suffer, and that if somebody suffers, that you've somehow failed as a religious leader. Oh, there's suffering in your church, you've failed. Somebody's not happy, you've failed. So that becomes, you can't even be uncomfortable. That becomes, everybody freaks out over a cold bug and they're willing to lock themselves in their houses because. And so we all tolerated things like, we all tolerated the slow creep of leftism and progressivism and feminism. And even, some people made quite a living chuckling at it and making fun of it. not realizing the source of it and the eventual end of it, which is we're standing on the precipice of that now. Is it the end of days? I don't know. But it's the end of the days as we knew them. That happened quite some time ago. But now we move from all of that into the decline and fall file, where I read an article that I will link to from cauldronpool.com, written by Pastor Matthew Littlefield of Queensland, Australia, one of the most insightful articles I've read in a long time, and it's about the transgender origins of feminism. Pastor Littlefield says there's an interesting insanity happening in the feminist movement at the moment, a battle for supremacy. In one corner stand women. In the other, men dressed as women. So picture that, right? The rumble in the jungle, but in this corner we have a woman, in the other corner we have a man dressed as a woman. He says it's a remarkable situation that's confusing to many people. But this battle, this tension between feminists and transgender activists today, says Pastor Littlefield, is not a corruption of the feminist movement. No. He says it is simply the unavoidable logical extension of the original goals of feminism. That's right. The original goal of feminism, Pastor Littlefield reports to us, it was a utopian vision in which all gender differences were viewed as detestable distinctions that should surely be abolished. He goes on to report forgotten historical details about early feminist icons. Stuff that I was unaware of because of my age and I just wasn't paying attention in the 1920s and 30s. Anyway, he talks about how early feminist icons exhibited gender-bending characteristics. Some of their activities would be seen as rather benign today, but they were utterly scandalous in their time. In fact, says Pastor Littlefield, the difference between how these feminist icons are viewed today compared to how they were viewed back then is the point of this article. Right? The fact that what was scandalous in the 1920s, 100 years later, we don't even notice it. 100 years later, it sells $1 billion worth of records. What was scandalous and shocking and criminal? Anyway, By the way, this article from Pastor Littlefield is from his series on satanic feminism, which it's definitely worth a read, I'll tell you what, for the historical perspective alone. Pastor Littlefield says the trans activist wants to smash gender boundaries, which is precisely what the feminists claimed as well. They called it the glass ceiling, the concept that wherever a man has gone, a woman should go there as well. So the feminists wanted to transgress gender boundaries. And that's exactly what the trannies want to do now. They've simply taken it to its logical. Pastor Littlefield calls it the satanic end. I can't argue with that. And then Pastor Littlefield notes, Faxnell has documented this in his important work, Satanic Feminism, Lucifer as a Liberator of Women in the 19th Century. Click through that and it'll blow your mind. I had no idea, and it's very well documented and very persuasive and very interesting, scary, and all of that. Anyway, Pastor Littlefield closes, their goal was always to break down all gender boundaries. This is what feminism means in its truest historical definition. So Pastor Littlefield simply points out that we are all actually just getting the punishment that the feminists deserve. That's because we didn't want to offend anybody by saying no, women shouldn't be allowed to vote. women shouldn't be allowed to go leave their house and go out into the workplace. That shouldn't be allowed. Women should be encouraged to stay home and take care of the children. Oh, that was so offensive. And so we backed off from all of that, and now we're getting the punishment that the feminists deserve, because that's the thing about cowardice, right? The thing about cowardice. So in the late 1800s, early 20th century, Christian men were afraid to stand up and assert the Christian ideal against feminism. We were afraid. And so because we're afraid, because we're cowards, what happens to cowards is they suffer a fate worse than that from which they cowered. So they were afraid of being called misogynist for asserting the Christian ideal against feminism. And so they're going to suffer a fate far worse than being called a misogynist or a prude or whatever they were afraid of. They were afraid of being called a name. So they'll go from being called a prude to having their sons raped and castrated in front of their face. From being a fear of being called a prude to having your son raped and castrated and overdosing on fentanyl in front of your face. That's what you get because you were a coward to stand up at the first. So we're not afraid here at the Weekly Worldview to assert the Christian ideal against feminism and all the other isms and all the other secular, godless, damnable heresies out there. We're not afraid. And so from the satanic origins of transgendered feminism, I'll link to that, folks. I highly encourage you to read that and then just start subscribe to Matthew Littlefield, one of the few men left on the planet. It's like Isaiah having his eyes open when I read Littlefield. I'm like, wow, there's still men out there with testicles and testosterone and a Bible in one hand who actually know how to read it. It's very encouraging. So from there, we go to the Just War file. The Just War file from Zero Hedge, a county in Maryland near Washington, has just recorded their deadliest month in decades. Prince George's County is instituting a curfew for young people after a surge in violent crime by said young people. So they're going to institute a curfew for a month. That's right. The executive up there at Prince George's County, Angela, she held a press conference about the new curfew. She says that she held a press conference on Monday announcing the new curfew would begin the following weekend and it would last for a month. Anyone under 17 is forbidden from public areas between 10 p.m. and 5 a.m. on weeknights unless escorted by a parent, says County Executive Angela there. Uh-huh. The parents, okay, in this case, the parent could be the gang leader. I mean, think about it, folks. We're talking about a 17-year-old kid whose mother and father, well, let's forget his father. His father's not around. If his father is around, he probably is a gang leader. That's why the kids are out of control. Their dads are absent. They're out partying, getting high, and chasing women instead of staying home and taking care of their children. And whether they're black, white, brown, yellow, doesn't matter. A father who abandons his children in pursuit of pleasure and drunkenness, that's damnable, and he should be punished. That's a criminal offense, by the way, to abandon your children to partying and lasciviousness. It's a crime. And so that's the Christian ideal, that activity is criminal. But because that ideal is no longer in vogue, now you're going to have children butchered and slaughtered in front of your house and stacked up like cordwood, piles of bloody cordwood in front of your house because you were afraid somebody might think you were a little too strict on the kids. Don't be so strict on the kids. So up in Prince George's County, they have to have a curfew. It'll be enforced by the police, whatever that means. It's enforced by the police. Does that have any meaning anymore? Anyway, up in Prince George's, they've had 24 killings in August. Killings? Really? Is this a Zero Hedge? Zero Hedge? Have you hired urinalists as well? Zero Hedge. Killings? 24 killings? Anyway, 24 murders in August alone. That's a record high all time. All-time high for Prince George's County. Children out murdering people. And so their solution? Let's have a curfew. All right. Good. We'll see. We'll check back in at the end of the curfew and see how that's worked out. All right. So we move now from the Just War file to the domestic invasion file, where out in Arizona, a man fatally stabbed four of his own family members to death with a knife. 21-year-old subhuman. I'm not going to name him. Well, I'll name him. 21-year-old subhuman Richard Wilson Jr. is being held in the county jail. The victims were identified as his own father, as his own mother, and his own sister, and his niece, 5-year-old Renea. The investigation began with a 911 call from the 16-year-old sister. That 911 call cost her her life. As he was on the phone with the police, he butchered her, along with his own mother and his own father and her daughter. When the police arrived on scene, there were four deceased. This is according to Cleveland 9, Cleveland 19 urinal lists. There were four deceased. They were killed. They were murdered. They were butchered. The 5-year-old Renaya had just started kindergarten, and the school district has made extra counseling services available for students and staff. The district is also prohibited from mentioning the name of God in the face of a family slaughter. And while there is no law against such school district workers, there's no law against them lamenting and praying and crying out to God. There's no law against that, but it is, there's no hard and fast law, but there's just an understanding. There's an understanding that's enforced by intimidation in some cases, and just a mutual agreement in others that we will not mention God in this sort of situation. It's underscored by the aforementioned cowardice that I talked about. Most of the people in the district are unaware that help from God is even an option. They're not even aware of that. And it's the same with the government and the courts and the police. None of them seem aware that help from God is even an option, and it seems like perhaps they need to be reminded. And so we try from here on the show, but maybe there's another way that we can remind these people. They need to be reminded in their face that help from God is available in this situation. In fact, help from God is your only hope. Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and we move from Casa Grande, Arizona, where the family slaughter took place, where no one remembers and no one's reminded to seek help from God because of cowardice and intimidation and just general lack of capacity and understanding. We go from there to Memphis in the Just War file. A maniac there. Should I name this maniac? No, this maniac there shot and killed four people. He was charged with first-degree murder, aggravated assault, employment of a firearm with intent to commit a dangerous felony, and reckless endangerment with a deadly weapon. Oh, the maniac in Memphis who went on a killing spree last week, all those charges I just mentioned were brought against him back in February of 2020. Those are the charges he faced over 2 years ago. He made a plea deal with the prosecutors. He was sentenced to a few years. He was released early in March of this year after 11 months, and he went on a killing spree. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, those charges weren't for last week's rampage. They were for a completely unrelated crime. The maniac in Memphis, back in 2020, he was only 17 years old. Hence the plea deal and the sentence and the early release and the COVID and the fear and the equity and all of that. So I ask again, what is it going to take for you people to wake up? What's it going to take? Perhaps what needs to happen for you pansies is for some real Christian men to march down to the courthouse and peacefully demand jurisdiction in a case like this. So yes, demand jurisdiction. In fact, accuse the attending jurisdiction of incompetence or insubordination, and demand jurisdiction to implement justice. It's time for the Christians to insist on implementing justice where the government fails. In fact, I would say that when the government fails to implement justice and protect the innocent, where the government fails, the Christian is obligated. The church is now obligated. The church is obligated to resist even unto death. Not killing. Not resisting the government by killing, but to resist the government even unto death. So forget being inconvenienced, forget being uncomfortable, forget suffering. I'm talking about resisting even unto death. Not killing, but death. And if the Christians resist to the point of death, then at some point the people have the right to self-defense against a criminal government. And so if there is no established authority that will stand up, no secular authority, then I think the obligation falls to the church at some point to stand up, and I think we're way beyond that point. And now it's a matter of formulating exactly how are we supposed to do that. How do you peacefully stand up and demand the jurisdiction of those who have abdicated their responsibility for justice? How do you do that? Help me think about it. I'm willing to go down to the courthouse myself if I can deduce how to do it properly. So that's the Just War file out in. That's how we make just war. As the presiding authority. Because if the government has abandoned the authority that was ordained for them by God, then it falls to us. And we have to handle it properly, better than they have. I'm sure we could do that almost by accident. So into the domestic invasion file, there was a mass stabbing spree across Canada this past week. The suspect, Miles Sanderson, maniac, died from what authorities are calling medical distress after he was cornered by authorities, ending a four-day manhunt after he and his brother, in a maniacal spree of bloodshed, killed at least 10 people that we're aware of so far. The maniac apparently murdered his brother, Damien, who was a part of the... Miles murdered his brother, Damien. Yeah, Damien, okay. He was found dead last Monday. The surviving maniac is facing murder charges for killing at least 10 people. The victims were found at 13 different crime scenes. Some of the victims were targeted, others were random. Police are investigating Miles, who has a lengthy criminal record. They're investigating whether or not he murdered his brother as well after the massacre. Okay. One victim had been assaulted and stabbed by the ringleader, Miles. One victim who was killed in this most recent spree was assaulted and stabbed by Miles 7 years ago. And Miles was still walking the face of the earth, laying in wait for him again, and got him and killed him this time. One of the victims in the mad spree of bloodshed in Canada by knife, one was from a village with a population of about 200 people. So you would think one of the safest places to be would be in Canada, in a village of about 200 people. Folks, what is it going to take to shake up and wake up the Western world, the normal people? So all you great Americans out there, you want to make America great again? What's it going to take to wake you up? Is it going to take an actual invasion and the daily slaughter of your neighbors and your family members right there in your own neighborhood? Is it going to have to take an invading army spreading into your neighborhood like a wildfire and killing people? Is that what it's going to take to wake you people up? I wonder. I wonder. At some point, we have to stop chuckling and tolerating and being averse to being called radicals. And we have to stop. We have to stand up and we have to stop these maniacs from getting us, themselves, and our children killed. Somebody has to stand up and put a stop to all this. From the Justice File, Eliza Fletcher, 34-year-old resident of Memphis, was found behind a building when passers-by noticed a smell, the smell of decomposing flesh. She was raped and murdered and discarded there by Cleotha Abston, a 38-year-old maniac. DNA matching him was found at the crime scene. After his arrest, the killer did not reveal the location of the victim. She was only found after people started to smell her decomposing body. She was a mother of two. She was a kindergarten teacher. She was an all-around decent human being who went out for a jog and was butchered by a maniac. By the way, Fletcher was married to her husband. She was married to her husband, not to offend anyone with gender-specific language, but she was married to her own husband, and they had two young children. She was the granddaughter of Joseph Orgel and an heiress to his billion-dollar hardware fortune. That had nothing to do with her death. It was just a random act by a drugged-up maniac with absolutely no restraint. The governing officials abandoned their obligation to restrain maniacs like Cleotha Abston. And so he did what maniacs do, and not had nothing to do with her being an heiress. Anyway, in the so what's it going to take? Is this one enough? It's not. This would shock you for a moment, but it's not enough. Not until they are stacking the bodies of women like Eliza Fletcher so high you can't climb over them, is this going to wake you people up? And I'm calling on the community where she was killed. People in that community started, led by her husband, as a matter of fact, if he has any wherewithal. Instead of organizing a 4 a.m. weep and jog, which is what happened, they organized a weep and jog at 4 in the morning so that they could all jog and weep. Some of the men down there need to get pissed off and they need to march down to the courthouse peacefully and demand jurisdiction to institute justice in this case. That's what needs to happen. We need to stop weeping and lighting candles. And we need to start grabbing these children by the scruffs of their necks and jerking them into reality and getting their attention. Meanwhile, this past week, as if that wasn't shocking enough, Jose Landeta Solano decapitated his victim, a woman with in which he had been in a, quote, relationship. He beheaded her in the street of San Carlos, California, in Silicon Valley, in front of her two children, chopped her head off with a sword in front of her children, a woman with whom he had had, quote, a relationship, unquote. The maniac, Jose Landeta Solano, has an extensive violent criminal past. Imagine that. And so what will they do in Silicon Valley? Will someone march down to the courthouse and demand justice? They don't even know how. They're too wasted. They're too wasted and entertained and distracted and comfortable and wussified and all of that to even know what to do. Down in Marietta, Georgia, the town of Marietta is said to be reeling after two police officers, two sheriff's deputies were ambushed and murdered while serving a warrant related to theft. That's right. They went to serve a warrant on a thief and they were murdered by an accomplice of the thief, and a thief and a murderer were eventually arrested at the scene, but the two sheriff's deputies were murdered. Just serving a warrant on a thief, they got murdered because there's no restraint. There's absolutely no restraint left. And we don't want to end up, we as Christians, who are the only people who have the actual answers and the only people who can save these insane maniacs and children from killing themselves and us and our children, we're the only ones. And if we don't get after it, folks, if we don't figure out how to get these people attention and pull them back from where they're headed, we're going to end up like Dr. Patrick Moore. I'll read this article from Dr. Patrick Moore. He was one of the co-founders of Greenpeace. He's the ex-president of Greenpeace. And he now warns that we are facing what he labels as a suicide pact and a death wish of being led by people within the organization he founded. Greenpeace is at the tip of the spear of a suicide pact and a death wish, according to one of its founders. Yeah, he says a huge number of very powerful organizations and elites are calling for dangerous and unnecessary policies focused on climate. And this is, he calls it a suicide pact and a death wish. So he says, now he says Greenpeace was hijacked by left-wing extremists. And I just want to remind him that Greenpeace was formed by left-wing extremists. Maybe he's forgotten. Mr. Moore has forgotten that he was a godless hippie. A godless hippie who, in his unenlightened, drug-addled response to nuclear testing, he founded a left-wing godless organization that would become the fountainhead of the communist new green identity, the transgender, all of it. The organization he founded and then stepped back from when he realized that they were all insane maniacs. But it is his failure to realize his own faults, his own responsibility, his own abdication of a responsibility for logical, reasonable, reasonable path forward. Well, because he didn't know, because he's godless. He's got a bachelor's of science in biology and a PhD in ecology. But that didn't prevent him from founding one of the most destructive organizations in the history of the world. He says we have a scary situation now. A herd mentality which is not based on reason, logic, or science. Using the words of science to convince people that we have a climate catastrophe and apocalypse. They're using apocalypse type language. Apocalypse, by the way, that's a biblical term with which Mr. Moore was not familiar until he put us all on the edge of an apocalypse because of his youthful indiscretion. And I'm accusing the church of a similar indiscretion, although we should have known better. And we should know better by now, and we better get to knowing better very soon if we want to save ourselves and our children from the catastrophe that's being brought upon us. Okay, that's the Weekly Worldview for this week. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio. And until next week, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.